Hi, this is Adam. Hopefully you enjoyed part one of our series on Kaleidoscape with the interview with Andre Floyd. Today on part two, Richard and I are going to have a conversation about my experience with the Kaleidoscape platform and what I thought in a thorough conversation and review of the hardware and software platform. Enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, I'm Richard Gunther from the Digital Media Zone. Welcome to the Smart Home Show. I'm joined, as is usually the case, by my co-host Adam Justice from ConnectSense. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Richard, how are you?
I'm doing well. I say usually because I missed last time. And you've been testing the Kaleidoscape movie platform on hardware provided by that manufacturer. And in the last episode, you interviewed Andre Floyd from Kaleidoscope. And I learned a lot about the platform that I did not know before. We'll talk a little bit more about that today. But today I'm going to interview you so that we can all understand more about your experience with this product.
Yeah, you get to have the fun every once in a while. You get to listen to an episode of your own podcast and you don't even know what it's going to be about.
It was a complete surprise.
All right. So as always, we open our episodes with a question. So I have a question for Richard. We're on the smart home side. Smart switch or smart bulb?
This is a tricky one because these two things don't usually get along. I am more of a smart switch person. The exception being if I have color changing bulbs. I try not to have just regular old smart white light bulbs because I think trying to figure out how to control that and have manual control is more complicated than it should be still in 2024. But interestingly, today on the Hub, which is the Slack channel for contributors to the Home Tech podcast, there was a discussion there about smart switches that have smart bulb modes. And that really is the best of all worlds. If you have a smart switch that can basically turn off its control capabilities and always be on, but still send signals when you touch it, some switches do allow that. None of the big manufacturers, unfortunately.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I think you always get your best bang for your buck for multiple controlling multiple lights by doing a switch, and it just makes a lot more sense. But obviously, you lose the color tunability of that light. The area where we have that ideal situation is in our office downstairs, where we have Hue floods, and we're using that. You have to remind me what it's called, but it was sort of the screen switch that we both loved. And then the company.
Oh, yeah, the Oro.
Yeah, the Oro. So they were one that did that. And unfortunately, they didn't make it. But one that I know is coming is Nanoleaf has a switch that is going to control their stuff. And I believe it's also just a general matter switch, too. So it will have that concept available. So I would tend to agree. I think it's a good idea to have the switches that can control, can go in a regular form factor, you know, switch power and infrastructure, but control other lights and other things. So I think it's a good concept, and I hope more stuff heads in that direction.
Yeah, me too. I forgot about that Nanoleaf switch, and that's an interesting product. I'm frankly surprised that it's not out already. And I say that because they already released the Skylight, which is one of their first wired-in products, and that inevitably is going to be tied to somebody's light switch somewhere. So these switches that would be able to control that in addition to being in the place where your original load switch was is going to be very useful for that product.
Yes, and as somebody who has a particular interest in that product, I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future episode some point.
All right, very good. Well, if you want to submit a question for us to open the show with, you can send us a question with a hashtag AskAdamAndRichard or send it to us at feedback@smarthome.fm. All right, Adam, I want to dive into your experience with Kaleidoscape and you and Andre shared so much about the platform, but just so that we're all kind of on the same playing field here, what products exactly are you testing from their selection of available hardware?
Yeah, so I guess a little bit of an origin story. I did talk to them at Cedia and learned a lot about the platform from them there, and kind of sparked a conversation. And they provided me with some review hardware from there, which I got towards the end of the year last year. And I guess one thing to understand about their platform is there's kind of two components that you need to have a working system. You need a player, which is in their case, something called the Strato C, which is sort of their player. And then you need some sort of a hard drive, kind of a movie server, you know, where, which actually stores, you know, the films and their platform and software. So why this is important is, you know, if you were in an instance where you wanted to play movies in multiple places, you could have multiple Stratos that all feed off of a single Tera. So in my case, I got the Strato C, and then they sent me kind of the latest and greatest, which is their Tera Prime 8 terabyte SSD. Those Teras come in both standard spinning disks with higher tiers of storage, and then they have a couple of them which have SSDs as well.
And you talked briefly about the benefit of the SSD product, probably not something that you or I would necessarily benefit from. I think that's more tailored toward folks that might be installing some location where you don't necessarily want a hard drive there because it might get jostled around if you're, say, on a yacht or on a luxury coach or something like that. I guess there are some other reasons that SSD could be convenient in terms of access speed and so forth, but I doubt it's a difference that we would need in a product like this. And it adds a lot of price to the products as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think my inner nerd would always want SSDs. I mean, everywhere else in my life, I go for SSDs now over spinning disks. But I think in this instance, for the standard kind of homeowner, my inner nerd would have wanted to buy that. But after the conversation I had with Andre, I think I would suppress my inner nerd and just get spinning disks.
Now, if I remember correctly, you received this hardware after TJ had already set up your home theater and everything, right? So you installed this yourself?
I did, yeah. So I guess a little bit of a caveat, you know, typically this platform is sold through a dealer and, you know, your own personal TJ would be the one doing the setup. That being said, it was a fairly easy install and setup. You know, they make it pretty easy to do and pretty easy to configure. So there really wasn't a lot to the setup other than, you know, getting everything hooked up correctly, getting it wired into my switch, getting it wired into my receiver, getting some of that set up. I did work with TJ on, you know, the interfaces with the Nice platform and everything I needed to do to get it in my remote and get that kind of stuff set up. But for the most part, it was pretty plug and play and pretty easy to do. And, you know, they did walk me through some of the settings and configuration, but in general, I would say the Strato is set up to deliver everything at the highest output possible and hand it over to your receiver in, you know, the formats that you would need in my type of a setup. So there are a lot of options there, but for me, it was mostly pretty standard config type stuff because it's just handing it over to the receiver to do what the receiver does well.
And one player, one server that can also potentially be in some installations of many-to-many relationships. So you really did have the easiest of the install options.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, we'll talk about this more later too, but you really need the kind of high-end setup that I have. So unless you really have a lot of high-end setups or you just really like this platform and it's your go-to, I don't really see the need for multiple Stratos, but yeah, I can understand some of the applications they talked about and where it makes sense.
Okay, so we're going to dive into a bunch of specifics, but before we even get into that, kind of like at the top of a review article, you'd get the summary of bullets of, yeah, we like it, or no, we don't like it, and here are the top reasons. What's your overall impression of the platform so far?
Yeah, I would say overall, super impressed. You know, I think their marketing tagline is the ultimate movie platform, and I think it definitely delivers on that. It comes down to, do you have the setup that shows off something like this and makes it shine? And where the differences in the content are shown off. So in a full theater, laser projection, Dolby Atmos, you know, the kind of setup that I have and that, you know, we talked about in all of my building a home theater episodes, it's definitely set for the type of customer that I am and, you know, what we have here. So I think it's an impressive platform, and they also really just make it very easy to navigate. You know, I really enjoyed all of that stuff. Things download real fast, you know, and once it is on the hardware, you know, it's instant playback and things like that.
Cool. So people may not realize this, but this company's been around for well over two decades now. So this platform has evolved quite a bit over the years, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But one thing that's been really consistent from the beginning is they've kind of had this best-in-class discovery interface, particularly from the browsing perspective. Oftentimes, if you see a home theater, like a high-end home theater, showing, oh, and here's a big movie library we have, the screenshot they're often using is from a Kaleidoscape.
Yeah, I would say the user interface of this is where this product shines. If you are a movie lover and you want to be able to go in and find movies, you know, they really make it easy to do that. I forget what they call their poster view, where they're showing kind of a selection of all your movies. They have a definite name for it, but it is definitely the coolest way to look at, you know, what you have. And I think one of the impressive things when they kind of walk me through some of it is you can slice it every which way possible. So, you know, let's say you're trying to figure out what movie to watch. Oh, I'm thinking action. I'm thinking Tom Cruise. You can literally go that detailed. I want to look at this director. Let's look at all Christopher Nolan movies. And not only will it search your own library, but also everything that's available on their store as well.
Nice.
The user interface definitely far exceeds other things that are out there. And I would say this is one of the key reasons why you want to spend the money on this platform.
So now when I was looking at what content they sell on the service in their store, as you mentioned, they do have a store and you can purchase stuff from them. It seems like they have all the major studios, probably most, if not all, of the minor studios. Do they also have TV content, or is it just movies at this point? Or is that something that you've explored?
I haven't dug into it too deep, but they do have TV content as well. So as far as, you know, what was out there, there wasn't anything I was looking for that they didn't have. Also, I guess worth mentioning, you know, pricing wise, you know, you're getting top high end stuff. It's comparable pricing to either what you would pay for a disc or a digital purchase. It's not exceedingly more expensive than anything else. And, you know, they do regularly have sales. And, you know, like right now, having just had the Oscars, you know, they have an Oscar special and, you know, deals on some of those movies. So I think clearly they have a good relationship with the studios and stuff that's on par with everybody else. I did notice some stuff that may not be available in, you know, the highest end platform, you know, in full UHD. That's probably the only thing that caught my eye in a few cases, but really anything new, typically it was there in the full, you know, fidelity that you'd be looking for from this platform.
Well, and that's the thing that I found impressive when I was looking through their store is that the content, as you said, is comparable. And sometimes that's code for meaning roughly in the range of, but in all seriousness, it's mostly $20 or $25 to purchase a movie, which is what you're going to find on pretty much any other service, unless there is some amazing special and stuff. So I find it surprising that given the quality of the content being so much better, given that you're literally purchasing, let me say that differently, licensing the right to view more bits than from any other service out there, it's really good pricing.
And oh, by the way, you can also rent at the same price as you would rent on Apple TV or Prime or anything like that. And you're getting that full fidelity top end content that you just get in the same way you would do a rental from like Apple TV, where you get whatever 36, 48 hours to watch it once you start it, and it costs $8 or something like that. So, you know, for something you just want to watch once, that's a pretty good deal and, you know, works very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find myself doing that every once in a while, particularly because you and I were in this school together before. I think you've given in since, but I still purchase physical media. So if I'm going to watch something and I'm not sure if I'm going to like it or not, but I want to see it as soon as it's available, I may rent it rather than purchasing it. And then if I really liked it, then I'm going to go and I'm going to buy the UHD disc. So,
right. We can talk about the physical media thing more in a second. I wanted to go back to user interface for a second too. So I think when I was giving you my demo of the theater, one of the things I showed off was my NVIDIA player. What is that thing called?
The NVIDIA Shield.
Yeah, the NVIDIA Shield.
Yep.
You know, running some things that, you know, may or may not have fallen off a truck of clips of movies and stuff. And, you know, that's great and all. I would say that's not, it works and it does a good job. But maybe if you wanted to be a little bit more legit, Kaleidoscape has basically that same function where they have clips of key scenes of certain movies that if you want to watch the battle scene in Avengers Endgame, one of the things you can do in that interface is pull up that exact moment. And it's not just like chapters on a disc. It's more like this descriptive scene that they specifically pick out that you might want to watch. So I really found that for people that have come over and wanted a demo after I had Kaleidoscape, I was leaning more towards that than using the NVIDIA Shield, because you guaranteed, you know, higher quality content and basically the same function of kind of what that was doing for me.
Well, and probably a much nicer browsing experience than running through file folders and file names.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So when you were testing this, how did you get content? Did they provide you with some content to watch, or did you get a credit to get stuff, or have you actually invested in acquiring some of the content to watch? How has that worked?
Yes, and. So I'm a movie lover, and as I was having discussions with them to test out this, you know, they gave me the hard question of, let us know what movies you want and we'll preload this thing for you. And I'm like, oh man, how exactly, you know, what does that offer look like? Because, you know,
I have a lot.
I really wanted to run this thing through the gambit and test a bunch of different things and compare to things I loved, had watched a lot, all of that. So shout out to them for being very generous for that and giving me a ton of content to work with. I, you know, I didn't get to look at all of it, unfortunately, but, you know, they certainly gave me a lot of options. So they did provide maybe about 20 movies or so on the hardware.
Nice.
As well as a credit to be able to test out purchases and kind of fully utilize the system throughout the thing. So I did a combination of all of those things, including renting stuff, buying some things, and really kind of getting that full experience.
Okay. So what were some of the highlights of the content that really stood out for you of the things that you've watched on the platform?
Everything. I mean, I think it was all good. I mean, I watched a lot of different movies, different genres, rented stuff, kids stuff, all of that. So we watched the Eras Tour when that first came out to rent on there.
Yeah, you sent me a photo of your family watching that in the theater. I was extremely jealous of that.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, and in that case, my wife and I actually went to the Eras tour last November, so I could compare that to real life.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that because Josh just talked about his experience watching that on Disney Plus now and how well it compared to being at the actual concert, but in some ways better because you're up close.
Yeah. I mean, in my case, we were pretty close for most of the show. So some of mine was like getting to see the stage. Like I was not high enough that I could see the stage. You know, we had tickets on the floor. So that was a great experience. So, but yeah, I mean, I think all the typical best movies that you would use for a demo shine on this platform. So things like Avengers Endgame, Bond, No Time to Die, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Ready Player One, you know, the favorite that our panel of experts shared, the Hans Zimmer Live in Prague. So, you know, all of that content sounds phenomenal on this platform, looks phenomenal. Stuff like Top Gun Maverick, which is, you know, I think one of the go-to test films now too, which I still have to watch in full, but I've seen more clips of it. Now at some point, yeah, my father's going to kill me because it's now his new favorite movie.
It is a very fun film.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, things like that. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to do in testing this was compare some of these titles against other ways I've had to watch it and watch them, you know, side by side or things like that. So for some of these, there are some of these I have on full 4K Blu-ray discs, so I can kind of compare those versions. I have them in my, you know, digital library on Apple TV, so I can compare those versions, or on streaming services, kind of all of those kinds of things. So I kind of ran that gambit of tests of seeing how things stand up compared to all of those different options as well.
And?
So, I mean, I think, like I said, this platform shines. I would say it is on par with the experience you get for the most part on a 4K Blu-ray disc. And, you know, Andre talked about in our interview where in cases of longer movies that you will get a better version on this service. But I would say for a lot of people that either have a big UHD collection and kind of have a setup, if you're happy with what that is and you don't mind changing discs, then, you know, you're not going to get a massive fidelity improvement for most things through this. I think compared to all the other digital platforms in the right setup like mine, you can definitely tell the difference. You can tell the difference in the picture. You can tell the difference in the sound. It definitely shines like that. And so,
and by all the other, I'm assuming you mean just the other streaming platforms.
The other streaming platforms, or like I would say my biggest library, which we'll talk about more later, is digital movies through Apple. So a lot of my library is either I've just purchased it straight out digital, or, you know, I've done the disc and the digital in the past, and in some cases even thrown away my discs, you know, since then, because I'm like, oh, I have the movie digitally. I don't need that disc anymore. Which maybe we'll talk about in a little bit, I might regret. So the reason to go this route and why I really like this platform is I'm a digital guy. I don't want to have to, you know, worry about switching discs. You know, in the case of my setup in the theater, my Blu-ray player is back in the storage room. And so if I want to switch between movies, I got to go out around, you know, open the cabinet and do all that. It's not the end of the world, but it doesn't make for the ultimate movie watching experience for sure.
That makes sense. It's at the point with me where I will only ever put a disc in if I know for sure that I can't have a good enough experience from either my Plex server or one of the streaming services.
Yeah.
And that's often going to depend on the title itself.
I would say for me, this is about getting the best experience and not having to make that choice. by just having the best experience also be right. the easiest experience. Yep.
That makes sense. All right. So let's talk about your content. And famously, one of the things that Kaleidoscape was known for in days of old was providing you with a way of backing up your own movies that you owned on disk, putting it on their servers, and then streaming it from there. Not surprisingly, they faced a lot of legal challenges as a result of that and had to change their approach. You know, it's funny, I'll tell you this little story. Twice now, I've been to Cedia where I was, frankly, surprised that Kaleidoscape was still around because they've done a really good job of pivoting when they've had to adapt their model to the legal landscape. And that's entirely to their credit. What it means, though, I think, is that your options for integrating content that you already have may be more limited than the Kaleidoscape of days old.
Right. Yeah, I think they were probably in the past, you know, based on what you've said and understanding from the interview with Andre, more of a open and flexible platform of bring your content wherever you have it. And I understand where in the modern landscape that doesn't make sense. And obviously, to move forward, they needed to have a good relationship with the studios and do that. So I think they've landed on the best possible version of that. But as we'll get into, I think there's still some room to do that as well. So they do still allow you to import your own movies. And I had a pretty full conversation with Andre about that at Cedia. And the main thing there is that they want to actually verify that you own that content. And so they have this disk to digital system where you have to use an approved drive. You have to hook it up to your system. And then they're basically verifying that you have that disk. I don't remember the exact prices.
Yeah,
but
it's single digit dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. It's under $10. I want to say it was more like $5 or $6. And, you know, at the end of the day, they were like, we still have to cover our costs of getting that download to right. you, which has cost to it, as well as compensating the, right. you know, the studios. So.
And are all of the studios participating in that? Do you know? Because Vudu has a very similar process for bringing content into their library. Vudu, of course, is also integrated with Movies Anywhere, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But if you were to bring a disc to this drive or into their system, are you pretty much guaranteed that they're going to have your movie, or is it more splintered than that?
I believe it's more splintered than that. And I don't know, you know, we can include some links in the show notes, but I don't know that every studio necessarily supports this. And I don't know that they have a list on their website of which ones do and don't.
Okay. So that's not surprising. I mean, it's unlikely that they'd necessarily manage to convince a studio to play along when Walmart, one of the largest retailers in the world, is not able to get them to play along.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the things I learned that was interesting too is, you know, in some cases you could also get a better version. So let's say you had a DVD version of a movie, you would still be paying that $5, $6, $7, $8 and you'd get a full UHD version, yep. kind of similar to what Apple has done as they upgraded their catalog. So, you know, I do think that's a really good deal and, you know, something that works pretty well.
We also have cameras now in our pockets that are capable of taking 4K movies. So is there anything to allow you to incorporate your own content into this, content that you have generated, or is that not really where they're trying to play?
Yeah, I don't think that's where they're playing. You know, it's really about access to, you know, your standard movie and TV catalog. So, you know, I think there are other ways to do that kind of stuff, but, you know, their platform, they're trying to stay pretty pure to that kind of content.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you have a lot of digital content already that you've bought through Apple. The way we share content between our respective systems. So, you know, I have Apple TV and I also have Vudu and I have Amazon. And for the most part, no matter where I buy something, if I buy something digital, it's going to be available to me on those multiple platforms because they all participate in Movies Anywhere. They're not participating in Movies Anywhere, though, right? So if you have digital content, there's still no way to bring that in?
Yeah, unfortunately. And I think this is probably my biggest disappointment in the platform. And probably it would be good for the folks at Kaleidoscape to talk to more customers like me and understand that not everybody buys discs. I haven't really been buying discs for maybe going on 15 years. You know, once Apple TV kind of came into its current thing, and that was the primary way that we were watching movies, I didn't really see the need in having discs around anymore. And so, you know, I think there was some concern from them and comments that I've heard that, you know, people are just buying movie codes off of the internet, or, you know, people are getting movie codes really cheap. But, you know, I think there's probably a large group of people like me that we've been buying movies for 15 years. We've just been buying them in a digitally only instance, which the Movies Anywhere system supports. So, you know, to me, I think the one last area for improvement for them would be to figure out a path for those kinds of folks. And I'm sure that getting an agreement together with Movies Anywhere or something like that, 100%, make people pay the $5 to $7 or whatever that you need to do to make everybody happy and still make some money at it. But I think you need to have a path for people that have purchased movies digitally only. Otherwise, you know, when you start looking at your cost of upgrading your catalog, the hardware itself is costly, but you might match the price of some of that hardware with a, you know, getting your movie collection on there as well. And to me, that just creates a barrier to entry of a reason to say no to this platform. And I think, right, you know, for a company like this, you want to give people, you know, as many reasons to say yes. And for me, I just don't like having to pay full price again for content that I've already owned, in some cases owned many times before.
Yep.
And before we did our big basement project, we did our big clean out project. And so in that big clean out project, which we worked with a professional organizer on, I had to come to terms with whether or not I wanted to keep my DVD collection. And at the end of the day, I'm like, all right, does it make sense to keep these? I was super proud of my DVD collection back in college. I had collected discs for probably many, many years. You know, my roommate and I in college always joked that we had a collection that rivaled a small video store between the two of us. But it didn't make a lot of sense to me because either I could watch that content that I had a digital version of, or I could simply just buy something or rent something if I wanted to watch it. So the amount of clutter that that added to our house, it didn't make sense to keep it. So I threw a lot of that stuff away because you can't really get money for it or anything. And as much as it pained me for what all of that probably cost, it just kind of made the most sense to me.
Yep.
However, if I wanted to actually pull some of this stuff into the system, I don't necessarily have those discs. I don't have that. So, you know, I guess my counter to them on the digital verification and being worried about people having cheap codes would be, what prevents you from going to a place and renting discs, or, you know, getting discs in another way and using that to verify the movies?
Right.
I don't think that would be too far off from, you know, what you're concerned about. So for me, that's kind of what's missing here.
Yep. Or buying discs secondhand that are being sold by people like you, they're getting rid of their collections or at deep discounts or something like that. Absolutely. So the discussion that you had with him about the digital content, I found really interesting because one of the reasons that he put out there for not supporting Movies Anywhere is that not everybody plays in Movies Anywhere. And that's correct. That, in fact, Lionsgate and MGM, two of the smaller studios, but then Paramount, one of the largest studios, are still holdouts. They're still not participating in that. So any movies that you might have that are in their catalogs, which equates to thousands of movies, wouldn't be available to be brought in or potentially moved out to use elsewhere. But he did mention that they had participated in Ultraviolet, which I have to admit I laughed about because I was never a fan of Ultraviolet. It was the industry's solution to the problem as opposed to a consumer-focused solution. It didn't survive as a result because it was onerous. But at the time, Disney wasn't participating in that. So you had about 1,000 catalog titles that weren't available, and at the time, probably even less than that or fewer than 1,000. But I do feel like some sort of partnership with digital content is necessary in the long run on a platform like this. And it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, maybe even some partnership with Vudu that tends to still be the place that you can get all the movies, despite the fact that maybe not all of them can be shared across all the platforms. That might be one way that they could make that happen.
Yeah, and I think you might not catch everybody, but something would be better than nothing.
Yep.
And, you know, it feels like Movies Anywhere or something that connects to it is probably your best bet right now than, you know, anything else.
Right.
To what was your next question in here is, can you watch movies you buy on Kaleidoscape elsewhere? I think this also speaks to another side of that problem. You cannot. So the movies you buy on Kaleidoscape live on Kaleidoscape. And so in a setup like mine, you'd lose that reason to buy movies there when you might want to watch them elsewhere. Right. So in the case for us, like, you know, if we buy a kid's movie and the kids want to download it on their iPad or they want to watch it on the Apple TV, I think this would really strengthen the platform if they could participate in Movies Anywhere, because you would also get that sync back to the other platforms and solve that issue as well.
Yeah, the kids' movies was exactly the use case I was thinking about too, because you can't expect that your kids aren't going to watch something on mobile or aren't going to want to watch something, even if they have the ability to go downstairs and see it on the big screen.
Right. Exactly. I mean, we're about to leave on a big trip for spring break. What's the first thing we do? We load the kids' iPads up with a bunch of movies to watch on the plane. So anything where you're going to have to rebuy those movies is just going to give you pause on whether or not to use that platform versus another. You know, my message to Kaleidoscape would be, you know, some work in the partnership world and on the digital side could take this from being a, you know, a 9.5 to a 10 kind of thing.
Yep, I would agree. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break for sponsors, and then we'll return with more about what's going on in your home theater. Everyone says that starting a podcast is easy, but let me tell you, making a podcast is hard work. That's where today's sponsor, Lightning Pod, comes in. If you have a podcast or you want to start one, then you should check them out. They can help you with every step of the podcast production process. We've been working with Lightning Pod founder, Eric Johnson, for more than a year, and he's really helped us take the Smart Home Show to the next level. Eric currently helps us with editing and copywriting, but he's also available to help your podcast with recording, monetization, website design, and more. Learn more at lightningpod.fm. All experience levels are welcome, so whether you're a veteran podcaster or a total newbie, you should check him out. That's lightningpod.fm. Okay, so we've talked about a lot of good stuff. We've talked about content. Let's talk about the hardware a little bit more and the platform itself. It sounds like everything has gone well, but have you had any problems along the way?
You know, really the only issue that we saw, and I think it had to do with the content, not the platform, was, you know, when that Eras Tour came out and we downloaded that, there was something weird going on there. And, you know, I reached out to Kaleidoscape and they helped me fix it. It was kind of a weird bit flipped or something on that where there was audio sync issues and we just kind of had to change where the audio processing was happening. But that seemed to be the only issue we saw. Everything else that we downloaded or anything looked and worked really well.
That's cool. That's very good. Inevitably, when I add a new piece of technology into my entertainment system, new problems arise. It just seems unavoidable for some reason.
Yeah. And I mean, I think anytime you have a complicated system with a lot of pieces and things, you can run into those. But what I found is it's really optimized to hand over the full thing to the receiver and let the receiver do its thing. And, you know, for the most part, that all worked flawlessly.
You talked about the user experience allowing you to slice and dice the content and filter on specific things. Let's say you were filtering on just kids' content. Do you have the ability to lock it to just kids' content? And is that anything that you've played with?
Yeah, I do believe there was some settings in there where you can put in kind of a pin or parental controls, both for buying stuff and playing things. I didn't enable any of this. I would say our approach, you know, as we have, my oldest is now 14, and the conversation we have is, you know what's appropriate, you know what's not. And so, you know, we have content that is more R-rated and things like that, and they know what they're allowed to watch and what they're not and what the expectations are. So for me, that's more handled in the, you know, trusting your kids, but also having those conversations. So no real needs for that in my household, but definitely those things are there if you needed them.
Any other general platform or hardware features that you would want to call out? Does it do anything like play a random movie or create playlists or anything like that that you've experimented with?
Nothing that I dug into particularly. You know, I think there were a lot of features like that. If you're trying to figure out, you know, you sit down and what am I going to watch? They do a lot of different ways that you could answer that question, but not anything I dug into overly or that stood out to me.
All right. So this is probably one of the premier systems out there for watching stuff like this, short of the exclusive systems that Hollywood folks have that let them watch day and date films at home. The cost of those are outrageous, and that's just for the movies. But we haven't talked pricing on this stuff at all. Now, typically, you would purchase products like this through an installer. This is not something you would go to Best Buy to just pick up on your own. You would work with an installer or a home theater designer to figure out what you need, get it all installed. Often the purchases go through them. So that's the disclaimer. But
yeah,
from terms of just manufacturers' pricing on this and roughly what you might expect to pay on these, what do these boxes cost? You mentioned that you have the Strato C and then you have the SSD, which of course is going to be more expensive than a non-SSD product.
Yeah. And by the way, they do sell it on Best Buy. I mean, they do have their high-end home theater kind of folks that do that under the Magnolia brand.
Well, so that's right, probably right. Why. And Magnolia is meant for the high-end stuff, right?
Yeah, right. So, you know, you can find these prices on those websites and some of their other dealers that list them online. So that Strato C player goes for $3,995.
So 4K. Got around. 4K. These numbers will kill you.
Yeah. And the 8 terabyte SSD goes for $10,000. And I guess for comparison, the spinning disk version of that is only $5,000. So, you know, that's half the price for the spinning disk version.
Wow.
And in that case, for the exact same price as 8 terabytes of SSD, you can get 22 terabytes of spinning disks. So for sure, that would be the route to go. If let's say your budget was 15 grand, I'd go a Strato C and the 22 terabyte instead of the SSD for a type of setup like I have.
Yep.
That being said, you know, looking at the amount of content that I have on the system and, you know, they provided me, 8 terabytes is quite a bit. And, you know, I think probably more than enough for somebody like me. You know, you might get to a point where you have to unload and reload stuff from time to time, but you could have a pretty sizable collection in that size. So it's kind of wild to me that the next jump up is I think there is a SSD version that's a little bit more, maybe like 12 terabytes. But in spinning disks, the next jump is 22, which you would have to have quite the collection to fill that, I would think.
Yeah. Well, I just added multiple 18 terabyte drives to my Synology to bump that up to a total of 40K with double drive backup on that system. And I'm probably done for a while. I probably don't need to expand that. So these limits would be something I'd be looking at very carefully. But what am I talking about? I'm talking about a DIY solution where I'm willing to get my hands dirty and I'm willing to research and purchase hard drives and I'm willing to put them into a NAS. And I would argue that's not the market this company is targeting.
Right. I mean, they do have an 88 terabyte version too.
There you go. I could be satisfied with that. Interesting multiples there. All right. I'm not going to ask the price of that. So considering your overall experience that you've liked this, you've been using this, is this something that you would recommend to other people if they're looking for a high-end movie player?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you have the setup like mine that really takes advantage of the high picture quality and the sound experience that this delivers, and you've spent, you know, the kind of money that my theater spec would call for, you know, this is a no-brainer to me to recommend. I think what it comes down to is, do you like the digital experience of having the movies you want to watch on demand and ready to watch in that easiest experience? You know, kind of like we said earlier, if you want the best experience to also be the easiest experience, you know, I think this is hands down a recommendation. Again, I think that caveat is a little bit of, it depends on what your current collection looks like and how worried you might be about the cost of bringing that collection to this platform. If you're only going to really care about 10 or 15 titles and you don't mind rebuying those, then it's probably not a big deal. If you've got a large collection and you want to make sure there's 50 key movies that you want to download, you know, you might be spending the same price as some of that hardware on films alone. And so, you know, I think that's where, you know, it gives me pause and you might want to consider or really look at what your options are there. So, I mean, I think somebody like you, Richard, with having an extensive disc collection, you know, their method of bringing those onto the platform would probably solve that problem for you. But, you know, in my case where I have an extensive digital collection, you know, there would probably still be a pretty big gap there. And if I wanted all of those things on the platform, it would probably be hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to get those on there as well.
Yeah. One thing I want to remind people about, though, is that this doesn't preclude you from still having your Apple TV on input too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think as we talked about, though, it makes you want to use this. This is a better experience. And so having that Apple TV on input too, and, you know, knowing that you want to do it, I would tend to go with this more often than not.
Sure.
And so, you know, that's definite recommend and definitely something that I've enjoyed getting to test out.
All right. So are you willing to say in public whether this is something you'd be considering buying if you had the only option to get it at manufactured retail price?
I think for me right now, given my digital collection, until there was an option to get some of that onto the platform, that would leave me some pause.
Fair enough.
But where I would be torn is, now that I've had this experience, you know,
you don't want to go back.
I don't want to go back. So yeah, I really like it. The answer would probably be yes, but not now. And the way to get me over that hump would 100% be some way to get some of that digital stuff on that really would be the only barrier for me. But yeah, it's a great platform and definitely one that I would love to have in my theater going forward. And we'll see what happens there. And if I can resist that temptation now that I've kind of experienced the best way to do this.
All right. Well, thank you, Adam. We have some feedback from a listener, actually from a couple of listeners, but we're going to hold on that because we're running late on our recording time. But if you have questions for us, you can send them our way with the hashtag AskSmartHomeShow, or you can send it into our feedback at smarthome.fm email address. Meanwhile, Adam, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter still. I'm one of the only people still on there. All the other social media platforms, Mastodon. You can find everything we're doing from a company standpoint at gridconnect.com.
You can occasionally see your sneakers on air flights.
Every once in a while.
On Instagram.
All right. Mastodon, whatever. I don't take as many sneaker pictures on flights anymore. I'm not on planes as much as I used to be.
Well, that's what I figured it was.
Yeah. Which is a good thing.
All right. You can reach me on Mastodon. I'm also on Instagram as Richard W. Gunther. And the Smart Home Show is part of technology.fm, which is a collection of tech podcasts that includes the Home Tech Podcast and the Spoon Podcast. And my currently on hiatus show, Home On, but we'll get back to that. SmartHome.fm is where you can find our show notes and details about each episode. And as we've mentioned a few times already, feedback at SmartHome.fm is really the best way to get in touch with us. Find us wherever you find podcasts and do us a favor, leave a rating, review, or more importantly, tell a friend. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. And thanks again to Kaleidoscape for providing the hardware so we could talk about it.